You are listening to The Healthcare Insider, a radio show by and for the movers, shakers, and innovators in the healthcare industry.
Good morning and welcome back to The Healthcare Insider. I am your host, Todd Schneck, joined by my friend and colleague, Todd Youngblood. Todd, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. Should be pretty informative. We haven't had a lot of conversations around post-acute care.
Well, we really haven't, and I think I'm doubly intrigued by not only the topic, but also the fact that this is a relatively young company that's making an impact.
No doubt about it. So let's get to it. Say hello to our guest. His name is Dan Hogan. He's the president and CEO of Medalogix. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, fellas.
The pleasure is ours, I promise. Thanks for carving out a few minutes to join us. Dan, before we get into our conversation around Medalogix, do take a few quick secs. Inform the audience about you and your background.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I started Medalogix about 5 years ago, and that was right on the heels of having owned and operated a home health care organization. I bought a struggling home care company in 2005 with some partners here locally, and we bought it from a hospital about an hour outside of Nashville. And the day we took over the organization, we had 8 patients, and by the end of the day, we had unfortunately a death and a discharge. And so our client base had constricted pretty dramatically, and I was terrified that I had made a terrible error in judgment in diving into a healthcare provider situation that I really didn't know a ton about. But within about 5 years, we had grown it to a staff of 108 full and part-time practitioners and a patient base of almost 500 in a rural market. And then we sold the company to a regional competitor, and I dove into the analytics side of the business. So that's how I got to be where I am, and we have been on a bit of a tear recently.
Outstanding. Well, that new organization is Medalogix. So give us the 10,000-foot view of what you do and how you serve your market. And I would be curious for you to inject into that conversation what lessons you learned. What things did you deal with this home health care company that led you to move into the analytics side of this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. We saw the market constricting as a product of healthcare reform even back in 2010. Prior to the actual passage of the legislation, it was pretty clear that mom and pop providers like us were going to struggle in the new post-acute economy that was being debated. And so when we sold the company, I made the decision that readmission was going to be a big emerging priority, not only for the hospitals, which is where that penalty, as I'm sure you are aware, landed first, but also for the post-acute providers who work so closely with the hospitals in the life cycle of a patient care. So we started investing some resources into the analysis of clinical data in determining what are probable outcomes for patients as they enter home care day one. Would we be able to look back at all of the data that we've accumulated over the last several years and get a pretty good feel for the probability of an outcome for this particular patient, either good or bad, and obviously intervene in certain situations where we felt like we could have an impact on that outcome. So that was the thought, you know, really built on the maxim that past performance is the best indicator of future outcomes. And so we started investing really heavily in some very, very bright mathematicians and analysts who dove deeply into the data. And predictive modeling in healthcare is not a new topic, but it really is new in terms of the fact that we are singularly focused on the clinical data, and predictive modeling thus far has really been on the claims side. And so what we did is we got really eyeballs deep in the data set and found out that, yes, in fact, we did find trends that were leading indicators of potential outcomes for patients, readmission, and then subsequently patient probable mortality. And so we've built product sets that not only identify that risk and stratify those patients so that a provider on a daily basis can look at the whole of their population and say, well, I've got 500 patients and here's my top 50 most likely to be readmitted. Maybe if I intervene in this way or that way, if I can provide a few additional clinical resources to these patients, I can prevent that readmission from happening. Or you know, I can identify these patients as being ideal candidates for a palliative care discussion, and maybe we move them into hospice if their family and the patient is amenable. And that statistically, again, as you fellows are probably aware, ironically tends to extend life and certainly improves quality of life for patients at that stage. So those are the product sets that we've built, and we've had remarkable success in the post-acute market, specifically on the home health side, in really just the last 9 to 10 months. We've kind of hit, jettisoned ourselves from the launching pad, so to speak.
Well, Dan, predictive analytics is something that Todd and I talk about a lot, and inside the industry, it's a very common thing. Talk a little bit about the reaction that you're getting, both from providers and patients to, okay, what is all this data and why should I believe you? Are you getting any pushback, or what is the reaction?
We're not getting any pushback in terms of the concept of predictive modeling, but you know, Todd, this may surprise you. Predictive modeling is of very little value in any healthcare venue unless it is paired with how to incorporate that information into the clinical workflow. You know, when we first got started, we were presenting risk stratifications, as I was describing, to home care providers and saying, well, here's your number one most at risk of going in the hospital. And their reaction, quite rightly, was, well, what the hell should I do about it? I mean, well, tell me how to act here. How can I intervene? How can I prevent that from happening? And so really taking predictive modeling out of the mathematical realm and into the practical clinical realm is where the value of that sort of data science comes to play in terms of patient care. And so it took us a while to come around to figure that out, quite honestly, but we've built these very complex mathematical structures, but paired them with then customized workflow solutions in an individual clinical venue. You know, we're not a clinical organization. We don't determine what is the next best approach to intervening on a particular patient in hopes of improving their outcome. But what we do is we build a structure on the back end of that data analysis to say, here's what your organization does. Here's how you've prioritized patient interventions. We've got patients that match that, and now we're going to help hold you and your clinical team accountable to intervening on the most at risk. And it has had it's had dramatic results thus far.
Dan, talk about how big a problem readmissions are. I mean, I don't think it's a subject that we talk about enough, and I don't know that a lot of people realize how big an issue that is. I mean, it's a miserable existence for a patient who has to be readmitted, and there's probably ways to prevent that from happening, and it's got to have an impact on the cost of the health care for this patient. I mean, talk about how big a deal that is and how you begin to address that.
Well, you know, and I'll speak specifically in the home care realm because that's really where my background is. In home health, you know, nationally, about a third of the patients end up back in the hospital in the course of their 60-day episode. So that's an enormous number. I mean, there are 3 million patients in home care on an annual basis. And, you know, when 1 million of them go back into the hospital and a large percentage of those are preventable, not only does that impact the cost structure, the overall onerous problem that we've been addressing or trying to address over the last several years, but the quality of a patient's life, any patient's existence being in a hospital versus being in their home is just, there's no comparison. So yeah, it is a huge problem. It's an enormous problem. And so whereas hospitals were the first to feel the pinch financially in terms of the penalty, you know, MedPAC has already telegraphed that skilled nursing facilities are going to be the next in line to be penalized when readmissions go up, and home healthcare agencies will be right behind them. So not only is it a big problem, it's now becoming a financial reality for providers, and that financial impact is what has finally, in my mind, really begun the slow but deliberate process of change.
Dan, clearly readmissions is a huge deal. There's another aspect, the coordination of care, that in my personal experience I've seen, it can really be a hassle and cause a lot of problems. Is care coordination as big an issue and costly an issue as readmissions? Compare and contrast them a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think
yes, care coordination is a challenge in any venue, even in organizations that have multiple care silos. For example, home care organizations that that operate hospices tend to operate independently and don't do a particularly good job traditionally of identifying patients on the home health side that really should be in hospice and facilitating that transition. Now, that's just one example of care coordination. Care coordination as an overall overarching problem in healthcare is an enormous elephant to swallow. I mean, if you're trying to manage a population of patients from primary care physician offices to the hospital to skilled nursing facilities to home care organizations and all, you know, really what the ACOs are intended to tackle, that the complexity of that problem is almost unfathomable. So yeah, it's a huge challenge. I think that it's going to take us decades to really effectively perfect care transition, much less care coordination.
All right. Dan Hogan will return after this quick break. We'll be right back.
At Javion, we know that healthcare providers do remarkable things every day. And we understand the pressures and challenges providers face in today's healthcare system. That's why we are helping providers by predicting and preventing financial and clinical waste. Through a suite of big data software solutions that combine clinical intelligence with deep machine learning technologies, we can stop the waste of resources and lives by stopping losses before they ever happen. And by doing this, we help providers focus on what they do best, delivering care. Javion, we help providers stay remarkable. Visit javion.com.
All right, and we're back with Dan Hogan, President and CEO of Medalogix. Dan, walk me through your bridge solution for dual providers.
Yeah, absolutely. So we begin with the home health EMR. We get our data right out of the back end of the electronic medical record and go back historically on the home health side. So we pulled data all the way back from 2010 to identify probabilities of outcomes, be it readmission, be it adverse event, or be it patient mortality. And on the patient mortality risk stratification side, we identify patients in a specific population that look a lot like, so to speak, the patients that have passed away within 180 days over the past several years. And we then just highlight those patients to the provider and say, hey, you know what, this is a patient that we suggest you consider evaluating for palliative care, for hospice. And that then kicks off, as I was referring to earlier, a set of workflow steps. The clinician has to agree and they check a box in the software. Yes, we feel like this is a probable hospice patient. And then they matriculate down through the process of notifying the physician, having a discussion with the family, and finally presenting that as an option to the patient. And all of that is managed in the is transferred to hospice. So we've seen remarkable results with that. It is proven out that the clinical data specific to an organization is really valuable in terms of identifying probable outcomes for patients.
Dan, you just mentioned that the bulk of the data that you're getting is direct from the electronic medical record. And that the implementation of EMRs across different organizations and care providers is uneven at best. Talk a little bit about the challenges of integrating with those systems and getting that data into Medalogix.
Absolutely. So, yeah, definitely. We get our data from our clients. You know, it is with our clients' permission that we attach an adapter to the back end of their system and begin the analysis of their data. It is highly regulated and protected data, as you guys know. You know, the Medicare itself protects home health data because it is so comprehensive, almost more than any other segment of clinical data. ResDAC, the research arm of Medicare, doesn't even allow watered down analysis for nonprofits or research organizations on home health data because it is considered to be so comprehensive that even in a de-identified manner, you would be able to go ahead and if you endeavor to identify those patients, you would be able to. So getting a hold of this data is difficult. And so we work very deliberately through our clients and then subsequently through their electronic medical record to build custom data warehousing capabilities for each provider and then analyzing what is predictive specific to them. And what we have found, Todd, is that what is predictive of a readmission in Dayton, Ohio is not necessarily predictive in any way of a readmission in Nashville, Tennessee. So we build custom models for each organization, and not just each organization as a larger client, but each facility. So for example, we've got a client in Michigan with 17 home care organizations or offices, and they have 17 predictive models, 17 different basically math problems in the back end that are evaluating based on the historical performance of those offices. And so that's how the system works. And yeah, we have a very symbiotic relationship with the electronic medical record providers.
Yeah, but understand you have a new partnership coming soon with a large home care EMR provider. And walk us through what that's all about, if you can, and most importantly, how's that going to impact how you go to market?
Well, it's we are about to announce a partnership with one of the larger market providers of electronic medical record services in the home health and hospice world, and that's going to impact us pretty dramatically. Where we were having to operate on standby environments in specific to the home care client itself, now we can work basically with the mothership and provide a broader spectrum of data analytical services to these clients. It makes it a lot easier, a lot cleaner for us, and a lot sooner to implement once we've reached an agreement with the client. So that's going to be very helpful. But we don't anticipate singly attaching ourselves to anybody. I mean, quite honestly, this is a service that we feel like everybody needs to have access to, because it is impacting clinical decision making in the right way. And so we will emerge hopefully in the next year or so with several of these partnerships.
Dan, very clearly, improve patient care and improve clinical outcomes. That is the number one goal of all these analytics. But the financial impact of it is also important, particularly in today's economic situation. Talk a little more specifically about the financial impact of having a good feedback loop with predictive analytics.
Well, there's really two ways in our world that software like this impacts the bottom line. Certainly when you have dual providers, as I was describing earlier, home health and hospice, or skilled nursing and hospice, or skilled nursing and home health, you want to have the patient in the right care venue. And specific to those two, home health and hospice, it tends to be a bit more profitable on the hospice side. So when you have a patient who really should be on the palliative care side of the aisle, You're financially motivated to get them over there, but also from a quality of life perspective, overwhelmingly, and we've seen this trend in the last several years really increase, overwhelmingly families tend to say, God, I really wish my loved one would have gone to hospice sooner. They were more comfortable. They enjoyed the last several weeks or months of their life better than they would in a nursing home, a hospital, or having additional procedures in order to extend life. So we're motivated dually, and we have found that our clients are not just motivated by the bottom line, that patient care is top of mind for all of them. But in this changing paradigm of reimbursements where cuts are happening year over year over year, you have to be very deliberate about where you spend your clinical resources. No longer can you just assume every patient is like the next and I'm going to send a nurse in three times this week and three times next week. You really have to be more deliberate about it and identify the patients that need three visits that week, as opposed to patients that really would perform just as well. Their outcomes are just as likely to be good if a nurse comes twice a week. So, you know, the identification of opportunities to be more efficient with the targeting of clinical resources is, at least in home health, the only way to remain profitable after 4 years of dramatic reimbursement cuts. And so we're seeing a lot of our clients take this information not only to identify who's most at risk and apply additional clinical resources there, but who's least at risk. You know, who's who is not quite as ill or in need of these clinical services, and maybe we build a different care plan that instead of sending a nurse in three times a week, it's a nurse twice a week and a home health aide. And so that you're seeing resource optimization as sort of an unintended product and consequence of the use of these predictive models.
Dan, talk about the technology itself. I mean, obviously, none of this is possible without technology and the implementation of big data and solutions. And I guess I'm more excited to hear where you think it's going. I mean, when we talk to you in 2 years' time, how will technology have evolved and what will that enable us to do?
So, you know, you mentioned care coordination a few minutes ago. I think the post-acute space has a real advantage there in that post-acute being skilled nursing, home health, DME, all of the things, all of the services that are available to patients outside of the hospital has never had the clout to say no to the insurance companies or Medicare. And years ago when Medicare issued a directive that you will standardize on a single medical record, they didn't have the clout to stop that. Now, hospitals have always swung the big bat and never wanted to embrace standardization of data or data processes. So again, the law of unintended consequences, what that has produced in the skilled nursing market and the home health market is an opportunity, a ready-made opportunity to apply technologies like this to standard data sets where hospital systems, even small to mid-sized hospital systems, are six or seven different custom data feeds in the umbrella of one organization, and it's enormously complicated to standardize that. So I think to answer your question, what we will see is post-acute moving more rapidly into the use of sophisticated predictive technologies like this because they have the advantage of standard data, whereas the acute space does not and is going to be years before somebody figures that out on the acute side of the aisle. So I'm very bullish about post-acute providers and the opportunity they have to provide better care more efficiently in a more rapid manner than I am on the acute side. I think hospitals have a huge challenge, and thereby ACOs have a huge challenge in terms of data and these sophisticated analytical tools.
Dan, look a little bit further down the road. What other applications do you see, and what other technologies are on the horizon that can have an impact?
Well, that's a really good question. I think you'll see the longitudinal patient record, which is a bit of a brass ring for all of us. But when we get a decade down the road, you'll see predictive tools. You'll see the emergence of analytics that can say, you know what, this patient has just come into the hospital for a broken hip, and you know what, the probability is that they're going to be much better off with 7 days of skilled nursing, not 12, that home care agency, not that one. You know, you're going to find performance optimization at the hospital level, identifying post-acute providers that are best suited for an individual patient's condition. I think you'll see that in about a decade. I think that will offer enormous optimization of resources. I think that, you know, outcomes being now the basis of payments or emerging as the basis of payments going forward, is it's going to take us time to embrace and understand, but I think it's really going to ultimately improve patient care in the United States. And I think predictive tools like the ones that we're just now creating are going to be a big, big part of that.
Well, that changes everything. Do you really think it's going to take 10 years to get there?
I do. I certainly do as it pertains to hospitals. I do think that, again, there is an advantage in the inpatient rehab world and the nursing home world and the home health world. But even among those providers, you know, there's a lot of real sophisticated technological development that has yet to be done for us to take a home healthcare patient and understand what is the likely outcome if they go into skilled nursing. Marrying those data sets together, those disparate data sets together, is an enormously complicated task. It's one that we or somebody is going to tackle here as soon as they can. But yeah, it's going to take some time.
Dan, I want you to go tackle that one sooner rather than later. I got to tell you, your comments about the longitudinal health record and looking at that, that's exciting stuff. And I'm with Todd. I want you to get that done sooner than a decade out.
Well, I'm working on it, guys.
All right. Well, Dan, I hate to say it, but we are now out of time. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about Medalogix?
Yeah, best way is probably at our website, Medalogix.com, MedalogiX.com.
Dan Hogan, the president and CEO of Medalogix. Dan, it was a real pleasure. Thanks for stopping by and joining us.
Great. Thanks, fellas.
All right. Well, that wraps this episode. On behalf of our guest, Dan Hogan, my co-host, Todd Youngblood, I am Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on the Healthcare Insider.